Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Lauren Polkabon.
And we've got some listener mail here that we need to read because it's going to launch us directly into this episode.
Yes, this comes to us from listener Caleb, who wrote in on Facebook and said, can y'all research how biological protein folding and how their computer algorithms work?
And we sure can do that thing.
We can.
And we did.
Well, yes, we did. The research is in the past. The podcasting is in the immediate future.
Yes, yes.
That is how this is going to work.
We're going to now podcast about the thing we've been researching. We're kind of delaying because, as it turns out, there's quite a bit of groundwork we have to lay before we can get into the technology. Because just saying what the technology does doesn't really do it justice. You don't understand how complex the problem is until you understand the basics about proteins themselves.
Right. So let's talk first about what protein folding is and why it's so important.
Yeah.
And this does have to do with technology, not just the algorithm part, but biological technology. We're talking here about cellular programming, not mm-hmm. like cell phone programming.
Oh, well.
But...
Shucks.
Biological cells, yes. The software that tells living cells what to do are proteins. And proteins are strings or chains made up of different amino acids, depending on a bunch of different factors like the structure of each amino acid in the chain, the order of the amino acids in the chain, and the presence of little genetic bits that act like stop signals.
Mm-hmm.
These chains come together and then fold up into these really complex three-dimensional shapes. And once they're in those shapes, they can form structures or act as chemical catalysts to set off any of the functions of a cell. They're directly responsible for life happening, basically. So doctors and scientists are pretty interested in how they form.
And you may be asking, all right, so what exactly, I mean, you're giving me kind of a big picture, but what exactly are they responsible for? So here are just a few examples. Keep in mind,
This is not an exhaustive list.
Certainly not.
So supporting the skeleton, that's a big deal for us. I mean, we don't want to just be blobs of people, right?
I mean, sometimes I do.
But then you sometimes can only go downhill.
To just melt under my desk.
That's true. There are those days. Then there's controlling our senses. That's important, obviously. Mm-hmm. Moving muscles. So yeah. Even if you didn't have that skeleton, presumably you'd want to have some say over where you were going.
I would.
Yeah.
Yes.
Digesting food. That's very important.
That's actually my primary.
Yeah. I dedicate nearly 87% of all brain power into figuring out where I'm going to get my food next.
Yep.
Then defending against infections, very important, to process emotions.
Huh.
So here's what it boils down to. If it's a biological function, you can bet proteins are involved in it in some fashion, and usually they're ultimately responsible for what's going on. Now, in nature, the way that a protein forms is through this process of linking together the appropriate amino acids, right? These 20 different building blocks that can make up all these different types of proteins. And the sequence will determine what the function of the protein is, but the protein itself will not be functional until it's in its final shape, which is called the tertiary structure. So called because the protein folds into a secondary structure first. And that's just a pretty simple one. One of a couple of different possibilities before settling into its final three-dimensional form. And then once you've got that three-dimensional form, that's when the protein can do what it is supposed to do. Now, remember I said there were just 20 different amino acids.
Mm-hmm.
So those are your 20 basic building blocks. Now, so far we've identified more than 100,000 different proteins that are in human bodies alone.
Shoof.
Yeah.
All made from those 20
building blocks. Yeah.
Wow.
So it just means that all the different combinations, some of these proteins are relatively short, meaning that they might be 100 or so amino acid blocks long. Some of them can be more than 1,000 blocks long. So that means that it gets pretty complicated just based upon the sequence of amino acids. Then you have to think of the possible orientations those blocks can have in relation to each other mm-hmm. during this whole folding process.
Sure. And also, I wanted to put in that protein misfolding, which can be caused by a number of factors as well, is thought to cause health problems from allergies to diseases like cystic fibrosis to most degenerative brain diseases like Alzheimer's. And this is all due to flawed protein structures giving bad instructions to cells.
Right. Right. So what we're getting at here is that this is pretty complicated, right?
Yeah. The shapes of these protein structures are incredibly difficult to predict because the language that they're coded in is really wibbly wobbly. The same way that you can say something in a lot of different ways in English or, get a desired effect in Photoshop through a lot of different options or solve an equation through different methods. Genetic code is redundant. Mm-hmm. The same amino acid can be built from different building blocks, and it's not all a one-to-one ratio of it's not a one-to-one factor of how something's going to work.
Right. Yeah. You can't easily predict just based upon, like, if I gave you a sequence of amino acids that made up a protein, you could not automatically say, oh, well, this is exactly how it's going to fold, because like we were saying, There's a lot more
to do with it.
Yeah, there are a lot of potential ways that this can happen. Some of the shapes that you can encounter with proteins include round proteins, that's like hemoglobin, long proteins, collagen would be an example, strong proteins, which includes spectrin, that protects the cells that carry oxygen from our lungs to everywhere else it needs to go, or elastic proteins like titin, which controls muscle stretching and contraction. And here's another fun fact. The chemical name for titin is more than 189,000 letters long.
What?
Yeah. It takes 3.5 hours to pronounce the full chemical name for titan. I am not making this up. 3.5 hours. So here we go. No, I'm just kidding. We've never done a 3.5 hour long podcast. We will not be doing one today, but it is the largest protein we've identified so far. So I guess it's entitled to a 3.5 hour long name. There are, by the way, videos on YouTube that you can watch that have the full pronunciation, 3.5 hours.
I'm glad that someone else has done that so that we don't have to.
Yeah, it was.
We'll try to link that out on social just in case you're curious.
The one I watched was obviously a Russian person pronouncing it because the enunciation was very Russian. but he started off already looking pensive and bored before. Like, I don't know if it was staged to be like that.
I wonder if he like lost a bet. Like what?
He had a nice little vase of flowers next to him. And I mean, it was, I didn't watch all 3.5 hours, so I don't know how much of it changed. I did see someone point out that there was apparently an obvious cut in the video some 2 hours in. Give the guy a break. Literally give the guy a break. All right. So the sequence of amino acids makes it really easy to predict what the secondary structure of the protein will look like, that intermediary step. And that part is easy to predict. But what the final tertiary structure will be like is a totally different problem. And to learn that, we have to do lots of experiments. And according to Nature.com, we only have data on 10% of all the proteins we've identified where we can reasonably say the way that they fold. Part of that is because you might say, well, why don't we just look at the protein? Why don't we just look at it? Then we can see how it folds. Where's the problem? It actually is an incredibly long process because these proteins are made up of the very tiny components and they fold in on themselves, right? So imagine that you just came up to a mass of string and it's all knotted up in a big wad. It'd be really hard for you to say exactly what the structure of that pathway
is. The full internal structure is,
yeah.
Sure.
So you have to do x-rays of these things, and then you have to very carefully analyze it and understand which parts are folded over, which other parts are behind, or they loop around. And it takes a huge amount of time and a lot of money just to do one, which is why it's not considered an efficient way of figuring this out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
however, you know, there are some educated guesses that we can make about the way that this sort of thing happens,
yeah,
based on a bunch of different factors. And, you know, these wonderful things that we have these days called computers
can
make that a lot easier. You know, once you code an algorithm of, you know, trying to figure out how something like this might function,
mm-hmm,
a computer can solve for a bunch of possibilities,
right,
of how it's going to turn out.
And so this work started way back in the 1960s, not necessarily with computers at this point, but just learning about the importance of folding. This is when we started to really learn about the shapes of proteins. And there was a research team that was led by a fellow named Christian Anfinsen, who experimented with a protein and found that denaturing it, which meant that he added certain chemicals and heated the protein, would end up making it inert, useless. It ended up unfolding and became unable to do what it was meant to do. Then he found out that if he removed those chemicals and lowered the temperature of the protein again, it would start to fold in on itself and regain the shape that it had when it started, which began to suggest, hey, the shape is actually important. It's not some random mass of folding here.
Mm-hmm.
There's something more going on. And Anfinsen would eventually win a Nobel Prize for that work.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life.
Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
So, how do you know what shape is the right one? I mean, how does a protein, quote unquote, know? No. I mean, obviously the protein can't know. It doesn't have any way of thinking.
Not that we're personally aware of.
Yeah.
That protein could have a really complex life. You don't know its life,
right?
Jonathan.
I mean, I don't mean to judge. All right. I admit, based upon what I understand, there's no way for a protein to know what shape it's supposed to be. So
okay.
And like we said, there are tons of different ways a protein could fold into any particular shape. A fellow by the name of Cyrus Leventhal actually calculated that if you took a protein of 100 amino acids, remember, that would be a short protein. All right. If you took a protein that was 100 amino acids and you assumed that it could only have two different spatial orientations between any two amino acids, so links 1 and 2 could have one of two different and 2 and 3, et cetera, et cetera. When you add that up across all 100 amino acids, you end up with 10 to the power of 30 different shapes.
Oof.
So yeah, put 30 zeros behind that 10, and that's how many possible shapes there are. So how is it that a protein, something that, as like I said, as far as I know, unless there's some weird metaphysical thing going on, can't make this determination itself?
Mm-hmm.
How is it that this has happened? You know, it seems like it would be impossible for it to happen just accidentally. Here's the rub. We're talking about folding. Folding is an action, and an action requires something very specific.
Energy.
Yes. You have to have energy to make this happen. Now, in nature, we tend to see things evolve to a point where they are able to do what they need to do with the least amount of energy needed to do it.
Right. The path of least resistance is usually what wins out, evolutionarily speaking.
Right. So when you think of it that way, if you think, well, it makes sense for this to happen in a way where it's going to require the least amount of energy for it to happen, then you realize that the reason it's folding in this way is because each individual fold is, more often than not, the most energy efficient fold for that particular pair of amino acids.
Mm-hmm.
So once you know that and you're able to build those rules into, say, I don't know, a computer algorithm, and you say whenever you have these two amino acids next to each other, they are going to fold in this particular way, or the rules of how these amino acids are close to one another will mean that they will either attract or repel or whatever, because it all depends upon the amino acids, then you start building that in, and it has to get more and more complex, right? Because as they get longer, if you have a fold coming in on itself and two amino acids are pushing apart, then you know they're only going to get so close before it starts folding a different way. You have to build in all those rules, which is going to take a lot of time. And then you take your string of amino acids and say, according to these rules, find the configuration that overall will be the least will consume the least amount of energy. Now, even knowing all those rules, and being able to say,
to
all right,
program a computer to understand them.
Exactly.
Or understand
right.
them.
Yeah. Those were air quotes that you didn't hear. Even to follow all that, using a normal computer to analyze all potential folds to find the final form would take a while. So, for example, 50 milliseconds of protein folding would take about 30,000 years for your typical computer to analyze.
Well, it's a really advanced version of that traveling salesman problem that classical computers have such a problem with.
Right. The traveling salesman problem, if you're not familiar with it, is the idea that you're a traveling salesman and there are 15 different cities that you need to visit. and you want to find the most efficient route to visit all of those 15 cities, you can cross back over your own path. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Sure.
So you don't have to, you know, you don't have to ever make sure you don't cross over something, but you still have to find the most efficient one. And every time you add another city, the problem becomes more complex. And that's what classical computers are not so great at. Now, one thing you can do is add more processing cores and create a multi-threaded approach. Uh-huh. And that's the same thing that we see in protein folding.
Right. For a while, distributed computing was a really big thing in this research.
Exactly. And distributed computing is what it sounds like. We end up using lots of different computers to work on the same problem simultaneously. They're usually linked together, at least if not together with each other, they're linked to a central kind of administrative computer.
They're networked in one way or another. It doesn't need to be like a local area.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be peer-to-peer or anything like that. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. And so we started seeing some approaches to using this model to make it more efficient to simulate protein folding to find the shapes that it would most likely take. Keep in mind that in these situations where you have a computer making these calculations, the answer we ultimately get is still kind of best guess, right? It's like it has a certain probability of being the right answer.
Well, you know, once you solve for that best guess, then someone who knows stuff, you know, an actual scientist probably can look at that and go through the entire thing and make a pretty educated reason.
Yeah, whether or not it's
accurate.
Yeah, accurate. Yeah. Exactly. And this means that not only can we see the potential for figuring out how current proteins are folding, but perhaps even make new synthetic proteins that, based upon their sequence and shape, do very specific things. We'll talk more about that in
later
a little
on,
bit.
Later on, yeah.
Yeah, so the most famous version of this distributed computing approach that I know of, I mean, there may be others, but is the folding at home program that's usually known as folding at symbol home. It's from Stanford that came up with this. I mean, people at Stanford did.
Not the institution overall?
Like a protein, as far as I know, Stanford, the institution of Stanford, does not have its own ability to think. But yeah,
I'm more suspicious about that than I was about the protein.
So now you're talking about like a group intelligence arising from, okay.
Well,
that's a philosophical argument we can have for another show. But yeah, the idea here was that you could, and you still can, by the way, download a program that you install on your computer. It runs in the background.
And it uses your free processing space to help solve equations.
Exactly. What it does is it divides up these huge protein folding problems into individual work units. A work unit is just a section of that protein where your computer is essentially going through all the different possible combinations of folds to figure out which one seems to be the most efficient. Then once your computer is done with that, it sends that result back to the main computers at Stanford, which then
compile them and
then it's kind of like putting a puzzle together. Mm-hmm. It puts all those individual work units together and they then have to see if that in fact makes sense. But it's one of those things that if one computer were doing this, it would take thousands of years, but dividing it up, it takes much less time. It's pretty neat. It also has a screensaver element to it. So you get these kind of cool representations of what your section of the protein looks like with the various folds.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But it's a screensaver. So it's passive. But what if there were a way to make it not a passive experience, but an active one?
What if? Well, as it turns out, and as everyone listening to this probably knows, at the very least from our introduction, if not from the internet, this is a real thing. There are, in fact, active ways that a normal old computer user at home who does not have any kind of degrees in bioengineering can participate in this process.
And say what?
Gamers may, in fact, are in some cases provably better at computers than doing this work.
Wow. But we just established that these proteins have potentially millions of different configurations. I just don't get it. All right. Let me lay some groundwork here so we can finally understand how playing a video game can solve this protein folding problem. So there's a particular game called Fold It. right? Mm-hmm. Now, the people behind Foldit include a fellow named David Baker, who's a biochemistry professor at the University of Washington. And he liked to compete, still does, in the critical assessment of techniques for protein structure prediction, also known as CASP, which is a competition in protein folding predictions. Usually you end up having certain difficult problems handed out to the participants, who all then do their best to try and figure out the way that the protein actually folds. You submit that to a panel of experts who then look and see which one got it closest to what is reality, and then they're awarded a prize. Now, David Baker had been using something called Rosetta at Home, very similar to Folding at Home. It was a distributed computer network, still is, developed so that a lot of computers could work on the same problem at the same time. It was the equivalent back in 2006 of a 77 teraflop supercomputer.
So gave him a little bit of an advantage in the competition.
Yeah, you know, not everyone has access to either a distributed network or a supercomputer, so it certainly was helpful. However, he was still finding that there were some protein folding problems that were difficult even using this incredibly sophisticated tool.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
So what to do? Well, a mutual friend of his and another person named Zoran Popovic, or Popovich, perhaps, I apologize, Zoran, if I'm mispronouncing your name. Anyway, the two of them teamed up. Now, Popovich was a computer scientist at the University of Washington, interested in graphical design, as well as sort of looking at the human ability to puzzle things out in an intuitive way that mm-hmm. computers just can't do.
As we have talked about, well, not related to Zoran specifically, but the brain's ability to parse out certain problems versus that of a classical computer. We've talked about that a bunch over on our sister show, Forward Thinking.
Yeah.
So we will try to link that out on social if it's a topic that you're specifically interested in. But yeah, together they came up with this idea for Foldit.
Yeah, it's really cool. The game's physics are based on the real world physics we were talking about that computer algorithms rely upon for when they're, you know, doing the simulated protein folding and they're looking for that most efficient shape. So the rules of what shapes can be made adhere to the real world rules that you would find if you were to look at that molecular scale. Now, players are essentially presented with what looks to be like a giant tangle of knots. And then they are able to manipulate this giant tangle in various ways. And they will see they have a score, and their score goes up as they find the configurations that most fit the efficient model of what that protein would be. So you use your score to kind of guide you, and you can do all sorts of things. You can pull, you can push, you can jiggle. There are all these different things you can do with essentially your mouse to move these amino acid blocks around and find out which shape is the most ideal. And there's actually, Lauren, you found a really good article about this that was really entertaining and told a whole story about this. I believe it was in Wired. And it was so exciting to read the story because it added the drama. It was two different teams that were competing using this game. And they were exciting for getting every time they'd get a point, everyone would just totally freak out. And there's one point where a 13-year-old kid made a move that got 20 points.
Oh, man.
Which was enormous. Yeah, yeah. Like, 'cause they were getting toward the very end of the deadline where almost all the improvements that could be found had been found. And you find out that there are lots of teams out there that take this really seriously. They really compete. So, you know, it's tapping into that part of the human brain where it's not just that we're great at figuring out puzzles, but that we're motivated to compete against others.
Oh, yeah. And it can be a really collaborative effort as well, that the game lets you create little bits of code that act like shortcuts. They're called recipes in the game, and players can work together to perfect these recipes, you know, sharing and modifying and combining their favorite strategies.
And the whole goal was just to use that human ability to seek out solutions, test things out, and just kind of intuitively figure out the right kind of shapes. Like, once you start to recognize things,
it's pattern development. Yeah.
So, again, instead of going through one at a time like a computer would, you might jump around a little bit. If one section doesn't seem to be giving you any more points, you might think, all right, well, let's turn this around. Let's see if we can peer deeper into this tangle. And maybe there's something at the very core that we need to gently change, keeping in mind that sometimes a change can result in a dramatic kind of domino effect out through the rest of the structure. Of course, you can undo moves, so you don't have to worry about accidentally hitting a button and it just suddenly all unfurls and you lose all your progress. It's not quite that bad.
Yeah, yeah.
So the question is, using this approach, how well does it work?
Really well, as it turns out. In 2010, a research team, including the creators of Foldit, set up a test to see how their players were doing and found that given 10 example proteins, Foldit players beat computer programs at coming to the best possible conclusion 50% of the time. Players tied with algorithms 30% of the time, and the algorithms won just 20% of the time.
Wow.
Another study in 2011 compared two recipes that had been developed by the Foldit player population that had become really popular alongside an algorithm that had been developed independently by professional genetic scientists, and they were really similar.
So not only do we have an example of video gamers being able to work out some puzzles, they're able to do it sometimes better than some of the most sophisticated computer, or at least as well as some of the most sophisticated computer algorithms out there.
And they can also do it as well as people who know what they're talking about.
That is pretty neat. I mean, again, it's one of those things where if you put it in the form of a game and you set up the rules in such a way that they are consistent, then folks can really shine in that environment.
Someone with no knowledge of genetic molecular structure can do it.
And they don't necessarily gain a knowledge of how proteins fold. They may not be able to express that in any way, but they're able to see, again, using that scoring system, how well they're doing. So back in 2011, Foldit players were able to unlock the structure of an enzyme that's related to AIDS. And this particular enzyme had been a real puzzle for years.
It's part of the inner workings of a virus that causes autoimmune dysfunction in monkeys. And a team, including people who had been working on sussing the structure out for more than 10 years, challenged gamers to suss out the structure in 3 weeks.
Unfair.
It took the gamers 10 days.
Face. Yeah.
It was a huge breakthrough.
Now, the Baker Lab, so named after David Baker, chooses some of the folded solutions to synthesize proteins in the lab. And so there's an opportunity here to create synthetic proteins, which could potentially be used in therapeutic treatments.
Uh-huh. Yeah. In the future, this kind of thing could be used to create better medicine.
That is insane. I mean, why is it able to create better medicine? Well, going back to what we said at the very beginning, how proteins are the drivers for all biological function, they're also often the drivers of biological dysfunction.
Right.
So you may want to be able to figure out how to deliver medicine or drugs that would be effective in treating proteins that have been misfolded, like you had said earlier, Lauren. Or you may want to be able to, quote unquote, get rid of bad proteins or lock them up somehow.
For example, viruses.
Yes. The HIV virus is made up mostly of proteins. So understanding that can help us learn new therapies to address, treating those sort of viruses. Or again, to limit how they can spread simply by creating, think of like a protein, a virus protein as something that needs to bind in a certain way to cells. Mm-hmm. If we're able to clog up those binding sites, then you render that virus ineffective.
Right. And think about that. Okay. We could hypothetically create these proteins that would block viruses from causing any kind of large scale damage. This could be a cure for the flu or hepatitis or herpes or rabies or the cancer causing HPV, a human papillomavirus.
Yeah. And speaking of cancer, it's uncontrolled cellular growth, right? That's the basic definition of cancer. Now, normally you have proteins like the P53 tumor suppressor that limit cellular growth and prevent cancer from forming. They kind of have the off switch for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. And frequently in cancer, that protein has been damaged in some way.
Right, which means that it is no longer able to govern that. And as a result, that's when you start to see tumor growth. So it might be possible to learn ways to repair damaged P53 proteins to help prevent or treat cancer. So these are big ideas that are really important. And it's not just in the medical field that we could see a deeper understanding of proteins really pay off.
Oh, sure. Biochemistry is a pretty huge thing.
Oh, yeah. It isn't just about health, although, of course, that is a huge...
It's a big one.
Slice, right. But how about biofuels? So if you want to make a biofuel, you're talking about taking plants and then converting those plants into a fuel using some form of process. And that conversion process takes some time, and usually you're using some sort of microbial enzymes called cellulases, which
are proteins.
There you go. So by studying proteins, by learning how they fold, and perhaps even creating synthetic proteins that can do the same job, but do it better than the ones we already have, then you can make it more efficient to produce biofuels. If you make it more efficient, that means you can make more of it, and you can make it more
cheaper.
Yeah, exactly.
More cheaper.
I was going to say cheaply, but that's fine. Cheaper, yes. So this is why, or just two of the reasons why studying proteins is so important. There are other reasons as well. And, we can see lots of different potential uses for a deeper knowledge of how proteins work. And who knows, there's probably tons of stuff we can't even imagine right now that will become possible as we learn more about these very basic elements that make life possible. So, really cool. Also, you go, gamers.
Yeah, I know.
Holy cow.
Right?
I get excited if I manage to finally hit somebody with a sniper rifle in Halo. And I'm not even talking with, like, shooting them. I mean actually doing a melee attack because I can't hit anything. So, here we have gamers who are actually doing science, which is pretty neat. I haven't had a chance to download Fold It yet to try it myself, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. And this was so nice to do this. It was a very heartwarming topic that is just beautiful.
Yeah.
And has such terrific reach. And
right.
And if you would like to be a part of that, folks, you can. It's free. You can just go to fold.it to get started.
Yep, you can download that. Or if you're not the gamer type and this doesn't sound interesting to you, you can always also download Folding at Home, and that'll just run in the background. It will mean that your computer will do things a little slower than it normally does, not a lot.
Sure.
But it mostly is taking effect when you are not using your computer. So if you leave your computer on all the time, but you don't really, you know, you only use it for a little bit of time, that downtime could be dedicated
to science.
Yeah, so pretty cool stuff. All right, well, this was a fun topic to go through. You know, it's a little bit more science heavy than what we usually do, which was kind of fun. And we have to thank Caleb again for sending in the suggestion on Facebook. Guys, if you have any suggestions you would like to throw our way, there's some sort of technology that you'd want to hear more about, whether it is cutting edge or something that we developed 10,000 years ago and haven't used since, let us know. Send us a message. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr with the handle TechStuffHSW. Our email address, which we hope will be up and running by the time this podcast goes live, is TechStuff.
We keep saying that.
Yeah.
But
TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com. Give it a try. Get a bounce back message. You get our apologies and a promise that we will get this working. Apparently, there's a switch somewhere that has yet to be thrown, but we will get it working. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.